Hey, man, is that the Rock News Weekly podcast?
Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man.
This is Rock News Weekly. Every week, we bring you all the latest headlines in rock, metal, indie, grunge, alt, and classic rock news, this week's new releases, this week in music history trivia, movies, pop culture, and more. Now on to this week's episode. This week on the Rock News Weekly podcast, week of July 17th, 2023, season 5, episode number 27. This week, we talk about Ozzy canceling his appearance at Power Trip Festival in October and announces his replacement. Rare Eddie Van Halen recordings are out now as part of Brian May's recently released Starfleet project. Dino Cazares from Fear Factory exposes the concert venue industry's predatory practices on bands, merch sales, and more. Plus, this week in rock and roll history trivia, weekly WTF, and so much more. All of our links are up every week at rocknewsweekly.com. Watch us live on Twitch every Sunday, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly, and on demand, youtube.com/rocknewsweekly.
All right, it's time for the Rock News Weekly podcast. What's up, everybody? Chris here, as well as David. What's up, David?
Yellow.
How's it going?
It's pretty good. It's very hot outside.
Yes.
And
it is extremely hot.
I have a thin layer of sawdust covering my entire body.
Doing some woodworking at the house.
Some fatherly duties.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, no one can do it but Dad, so take pride in that, you know? You're the woodworking man of the family, you know?
I guess so.
It's by default. It's by default. Yeah. And I just got back from Grateful Dead show, well, more specifically Dead & Company, their final tour, final run of shows in the Bay Area. So we just got back off the train literally an hour ago, so we are ready to go with this week's rock news. So let's get to it, guys. This week, of course, July 17th. It's already July, yes. Ozzy canceling his appearance at Power Trip Festival. Talk about that. The Eddie Van Halen recordings, part of that Brian May Starfleet project, are out now. We'll go over that again. Dino Cazares from Fear Factory. This was the interesting topic this week that I thought we could delve into. Exposing the concert venue industry and their predatory practices on bands' merch sales. We'll talk all about that. It's really interesting. And we'll talk to some of these bands that have toured and have a really good insight into it. It's pretty interesting. Everything's up. Rocknewsweekly.com. As always, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff. All at Rock News Weekly. Let's delve into it. Unfortunate news for Ozzy, having to cancel his Power Trip Festival appearance. Judas Priest will be replacing him. So they've already updated the lineup here. That's where Ozzy was going to be on Saturday night with AC/DC. Now it is Judas Priest, and Ozzy unfortunately had to say in a statement, quote, "My original plan was to return to the stage in the summer of 2024, and when the offer to do this show came in, I optimistically moved forward. Unfortunately, my body is telling me I'm just not ready yet, and I'm much too proud to have the first show that I do in nearly 5 years be half-assed," end quote. What do you think of that?
Well, it's good that his body is not ready yet, right?
Right.
So the point being that he's going to make the effort. He's not done.
Nope. And he's charging up. He's charging his batteries, guys. Ozzy's battery charge is really slow right now. He's like a very, very old iPhone that it just takes forever. It doesn't hold a charge very long. It takes forever to kind of get there.
What about the updates, though? If he updates, then it just, like, totally slows down.
Totally screws it up.
Freaking Apple.
He's offline. He's right? Offline at this point.
None of the apps work anymore.
Right. Get better, Ozzy. Get better soon. Don't push it, man. Queen's Brian May releasing the Starfleet Project box set. We talked about this about a month ago when this was first brought up, but now it's officially out. If you guys are interested in checking this out, it's Starfleet Project. It's kind of a super group. It was released 40 years ago when Queen was taking a break. And he kind of got together with some of his friends, some of his favorite musicians at the time. Eddie Van Halen, REO Speedwagon drummer Alan Gratzer, Rod Stewart bassist Phil Chen, and keyboardist Fred Mandel. Played with Pink Floyd, Alice Cooper, Elton John, some heavy hitters. And even Roger Taylor contributed backing vocals to the title track from this. So it's got a pretty cool who's who of, rockers at the time. And some of the last known recordings of Eddie Van Halen from that era. So it's really cool that all this stuff is actually seeing the light of day. and it's being put out in a really cool way for a lot of fans to appreciate. If you guys are interested in it, it's a pretty expensive box set, but there is a kind of a condensed version for fans that it's a CD version, but it has a lot of the B-sides, outtakes, all that cool stuff. I think it's more along the $20, $30 range than I think this bad boy is in the $250+. But it's a definitive edition, and if you're an Eddie Van Halen fan, you might be into all that stuff, so check
and these,
it out.
Like, these tracks were complete and...
Yep.
Okay, so this isn't like what we talked about last week, where you're taking some
AI?
Stuff.
Oh, AI? No.
And then, like,
that's a good point, though, because, it seems like, you know, we're on that line of music stuff with that, like taking the old as it was, unadulterated, just old recordings, totally fine. But now we're at that line where Paul McCartney and some of these other guys are using AI to kind of clean up vocals, clean up takes, maybe, you know, kind of re-record the vocals in a way to kind of make them more whatever, pitch perfect. I hope that's not going to be the trend going forward, that we'll still just have original recordings of some of the stuff like this. But who knows, man? I mean, this is not AI affected, so this is all just how it is. So there you go. Check it out. All right. Kind of the cool topic, it's kind of cool to talk about it and bring light to it, but it's not really cool what's happening to a lot of bands out there. And Fear Factory guitarist Dino Cazares said in a new interview this week, just kind of delving into how hard it is for artists to kind of get their merch cut the way they used to. And in a new kind of revelation about this, he kind of goes in depth, including increased travel expenses, gas, tour buses, hotels, flight costs. Everything's gone up after the post-pandemic, right? All the prices of all these services. But the bands and a lot of other, you know, artists are not being compensated as such. So he says, quote, "It's kind of just life in general. Anybody who has a normal job, you're still getting paid $10 an hour, but your rent went up, your insurance went up, food prices went up, gas prices, but your pay is the same. It's kind of like how it's been for bands as well. Promoters are only willing to pay you so much, and everything else went up. So now the club owners and the promoters are taking a cut of your merchandise, so it's making it harder and harder for artists to survive out there." So he was asked if the merch cuts that the promoters are taking from the artists are getting larger than they were in the past. He said, "Yes, that's been the whole debate, that it's been getting larger and larger. Of course, there's always been a percentage that you have to give to venues. That's just how it is, merch percentage. We're talking about, you know, merch percentage specifically. But of course, it's getting higher and higher. So unfortunately, the fans are the ones who have to pay for that. Because once the merch percentages get higher at the venue, then you're going to have to raise your prices on a t-shirt. That's just inevitable and that's unfortunate, but that's what happens." So what do you think about that? Just before we delve into more about it.
So it's not a new thing.
It's not a new thing.
And they've been doing,
but the
cut
is getting bigger.
Larger and larger.
Right.
Oh, man. It's crazy because it's a lot of the story of inflation, like in the last period in the interim since the pandemic, and now it's all like all these different stories and so on and so forth. And
yep.
In the end, it seems like a lot of it was just corporations figuring out that they could charge more. And they, you know, used to be called greedflation, and then finally when the economists admitted that that was what was happening, they had to change it.
Oh, wait, no, we can't have that name.
Nicer,
yeah.
Right? but I don't know. It seems kind of like this. It's like,
I think
hey,
so.
Look at that.
We can take
a charge more
these venues
having to pay everything.
And these venues were taking a hit, let's be honest, too. During this pandemic, there was a time where these venues took a big, big hit in terms of live music, and now maybe this is their way of reclaiming some of that loss, maybe even ensuring in the future that they will stay a little bit more profitable than they had been.
But, well, I mean, that's kind of the function. I think a lot of businesses, they were like trying to recoup losses, and then they got even more profitable, and they're like, hey,
we could just keep doing
this. Let's just keep doing this.
Yep,
right?
Exactly. So the interview pointed out that artists do not get any cut of the alcohol, and I thought this was a good point. It's sold in the venues where they're performing. And he says, quote, "It's not just the promoters and the club venues. It's also the ticket agencies. It's all a big thing. It's not one thing. It's all of it. And you're right. We do not get a percentage of the alcohol at all whatsoever. But I did hear that there was one artist that did that. And that was Axl Rose. He was putting Guns N' Roses in stadiums, in soccer stadiums, baseball stadiums, selling out 40, 50,000 people. But he was like, if you want Guns N' Roses in your stadium, you're going to have to give me a piece of the alcohol. And I heard a rumor that he got a piece of that alcohol percentage, which is really good.
I was going to say, I thought he wasn't drinking so much anymore.
No, he's not drinking, but he's getting that money for it, right? Which probably evened out to what the promoters were getting from the merch percentage. But not a lot of the artists in my genre have that kind of power, if at all. And I wondered, too, when I was at the Dead show last night, it was a sold-out stadium show, I wondered if they're getting a percentage of that alcohol sales as well. Hmm. And it feels like they're really pushing it, man. You know how they have the guys selling peanuts? Hey, get your peanuts here. Nothing but alcohol that way at the show.
Really?
Just guys walking around with coolers.
Coolers of beer.
Of anything you want. Like
no
seltzer,
Dodger dogs.
Nothing.
Oh, wait, no, you're... Here
you could get them there, in the but they weren't selling them like that. Okay. They're selling the alcohol
the
like
beer.
That. Like, don't even leave your seat. It's right here. I got the card reader and everything. And they're really pushing that alcohol, and I got to think that there's a percentage there that the band's getting.
Okay.
Because of that, it's like pushing merch, right? And the merch, man, some of the most expensive merch that I've seen in a while at that Dead show last night.
How much for a t-shirt?
$50 starting.
Dang.
50. Nothing cheaper than that. Hats. 50.
And that was just like the Bear Midriff shirt.
Yes,
right?
just regular tour shirt. Okay. Even women's shirts, the same, you know, it's half the material. $50, you know, a little
wow.
Tank top. Hats 50.
Well, that's what I was wondering. How about the male Bear Midriff?
Like, I didn't see any of those. I didn't see a crop top male shirt.
Oh, okay.
But I did get a hoodie and it was $80. So, you know, that's. And you got to think, the band's getting a good chunk of that, but the venue now is getting a big, significant chunk. And it says, here they go on further here, many venues require bands to pay them a percentage of merch sales. Commonly, that split is 20-80, meaning for every dollar a band makes selling a t-shirt, the venue gets 20 cents. It's an accepted industry standard that understandably riles touring bands, especially those acts for whom merch is still crucial for ensuring that a tour is profitable. They go on to say that's the typical thing that venues do. Dream Theater guitarist John Petrucci recently told this interview. He says, quote, I think that if you're in the position, you should try to negotiate that as much as you can. I mean, 30%, that's way too high. I think it's more typical to be in the 15 to 20 range. And I also think it might be different for soft goods and physical things like records and stuff like that. So there may be a difference there as well. But it's all reasons to be on top of your shit and your business and have people representing you know what they're doing, because a young band might not know they can negotiate that. And you just kind of go, oh, I guess it is what it is. And I guess in some circumstances you have no leverage, then it is what it is. But you can look at that and be conscious of that because it sucks. Then you're in that position. What are you going to do? Are you going to jack up the price of your shirt? Then somebody is paying $50, $60 for a shirt. That's ridiculous. And you feel like you're gouging your fans, and that's not cool. So it goes back to, like, I was just at a show this weekend, $50 shirts.
Yeah.
Most bands that I see, like Iron Maiden and bands that tour not very often, sometimes across the pond, so to speak, that they don't tour the U.S., those shirts are $50, $55 sometimes, I've seen. What's the highest that you've paid that you can think of for some band merch?
I got a sweatshirt, an Odyssey sweatshirt last year. And it was like $85.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really expensive. I mean, my wife bought it for me. Like, I was sitting back at the table, and
that's
she bought
cool.
it for me, because otherwise, I don't think
you probably
would have
got it.
But it was, I was amazed when she told me how much it was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's pretty crazy. So they kind of finished this out here. Dream Theater keyboardist Jordan Rudess, he says, quote, and it's also sad because a lot of these younger bands, they're working so hard to get out there and play. They finally show up at a venue and they stand a chance of making a little more money at the merch booth. And then you've got these venues that want to take money out of their pockets. You see it all the time. It sucks. So, I don't know. I guess that now they're saying that that standard of 20% is now basically 30%. And it sucks. I mean, you know, I don't know how you're going to fix that, because these, you need the venues. The bands need them. And the venues kind of got them by the balls. Like, what are you going to do, right? You could sell your merch, I guess, in the van out in the parking lot. Maybe that's the way around it. But if you want
to... Just outside the gate.
Yeah, right.
Everyone will be sure to see it.
No, I don't think that would work. They wouldn't allow that. You'd have to do it somewhere else. So, yeah, I don't know. They kind of got you. Oh, well, it is what it is. Sucks for the younger bands out there. All right, a couple little rock quick hits before we're done with the news.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Randy Blythe cutting off his signature dreadlocks. He parted ways with his iconic dreadlocks over the weekend. Well, it was actually last Wednesday. Showed up with a newly shaven head at the band show in Quebec. And I got to think, man, maybe it's this heat wave that finally did him in.
He sacrificed them.
That's got to be so hot. Oh, yes, maybe like a lamb of God.
As a lamb of God would.
Maybe he formed his dreadlocks into a lamb.
And then he burned it.
Yes.
On an altar.
And it probably stunk really bad.
Good gosh.
But he looks better. I think he looks better.
Well, he does have, you know, he does have individual dreadlocks.
Yes.
There's no dread logs in there.
Or a pelt.
Yeah.
A dread pelt. He does still have the individual locks, you're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it smelled pretty good.
Breaking Benjamin in the studio. They posted a photo of them in the recording studio. They have a lot of music recorded, quote, for their next album. Guitarist Keith Wallen told Wired. He says, quote, "We've been always kind of writing, chronicling some ideas over the past few years, though through the pandemic, all that stuff we've been writing, but here recently it started to pick up a little bit, so I'm hoping there's going to be some new music out sometime within the next year." So we haven't heard anything new from Breaking Benjamin album-wise in about 4 or 5 years, so good for them.
Okay, I got to tell you, I don't know Breaking Benjamin.
Okay.
Tell me about what kind of music they make.
It's like heavy type of, maybe like, have you heard of Chevelle or a band like that?
Okay.
I would compare them all
right,
to them.
So it surprises me.
What's
because
that?
With a name like Breaking Benjamin, I thought they must be some sort of Christian, pop punks, Reliant K or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, you know,
they have that.
The alliterations,
you know? I know.
I don't know. I don't want to bag on it.
No. It's
really
like an early 2000s kind of emo thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, it's true. And I think it's funny. Like, there's a lot of bands like that they probably thought it was a really cool name in their teenage years.
Check it out. It's an alliteration.
Yeah. And now they're 40 and they're like, it's really not
I'm
going to
have
cool.
one called Who Sells Seashells by the Seashore.
That sounds like an awesome band.
Right?
All right. We got to get some birthday action going. All right, David, take it away. What do we got?
All righty then. The legend Richard Cheech Marin of Cheech and Chong Films, as well as Nash Bridges and born in East L.A., is 77 years old and looking smooth.
Looking smooth, man. He is. He's looking good.
Roger McGinn, singer-guitarist of The Byrds, is 81.
Looking pretty good, too. Look at his little mandolin.
He really doesn't look like he's from The Byrds. He looks more like Kenny Loggins.
I know.
Right there. Right?
Definitely.
A little different.
Michael McDonald.
Yeah. Igor Koroshev, former keyboardist and leader of the Wolf Battalion in the... No,
yes, he's like the Russian mafia.
Don't you take photo of me. Don't you... You know who I am?
Right? It's like he's yelling at a spook or something like that. Don't take photos, send America.
I break your camera.
Yeah, sending to America. I don't know if I told you how old he was. Let's see.
Oh, yeah, how old
is he? Let's see, I got so...
58.
He's 58 of Yes. Okay.
Yes.
All right, Jason Bonham, drummer, son of Led Zeppelin drummer John Bonham is 57.
57.
Artemis Pyle, former drummer of Lynyrd Skynyrd, 75 years old.
What do you think he's smelling right there?
Maybe it's...
Barbecue, a fart?
Maybe
what
it's
is
Rose
it?
Dreadlocks.
Randy Blythe burning his dreadlocks?
Yeah, well, it looks like he's cursing it.
And it's also, I think he's holding the smallest tambourine possible.
Well, I couldn't tell if it was a tambourine or a psaltery ball. And he's like, I'll get you with some of this frankincense and myrrh.
It could be.
I'll sweeten you right up.
It could be. He's got some black gloves on there, too. He's
right?
not messing
Old
around,
black
man.
Black water. Come on now.
All right. Peter Lewis. Are you sure that is Peter Lewis? That's not...
That's what Google said.
What's the guy's name who everyone tells me I look just like him? He's from... good gosh, what's his name? Oh, I'll 30 minutes later, it'll come to
me. Okay, all right.
He's the guy who lights a small fire in the panties of... on Tommy Boy or whatever, and he's got blonde hair. Oh, man, that's killing me. Okay, Peter Lewis of Moby Grape.
David Spade?
78 years old. No, the old guy who's like, stalking them in it. And he was in a bunch of...
Tommy Boy?
Was it Tommy Boy or the other one that came out around then?
Black Sheep?
Black Sheep. I think it was Black Sheep he was in.
With the Chris Farley movie.
Yeah, Chris Farley movie.
He's oh! Got blonde... What's Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
That's Tommy Boy. Yeah, because yeah, Gary Busey yeah, was
Gary
the Tommy
Busey.
Boy.
He's like, oh, this,
he was the crazy military guy.
Small fire in your mama's yeah. penny drawer. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. How about I head over to your house and start a small
fire? I've been told by no less than two people that I look just like
Gary
Busey.
Busey.
Like, thank you very much. That is very handsome and insane, unhinged.
Yes, that is a great compliment to Gary.
Yeah, I know. Right? It really just makes me very happy. All right, Marky Ramone, drummer of the Ramones, is 71.
Two thumbs up.
That is disputed. Trevor Horn, record producer, former member of the Bugles, and yes, look at that. It's today's yes birthday.
It's yes
man.
Birthday
74
day.
74 years old. They got the same birthday? Or just this week?
It's just the week, I think. I think it was actually a day or two apart.
Okay. Joe Satriani, guitarist of Chickfoot, Deep Purple.
Oh, that's supposed to be Chicken Foot. I don't know why I put Chick Foot.
All right. He's 67 years old. Stuart Copeland, drummer of The Police, is 71 years old. How do you feel about The Police?
I love The Police.
I like The Police,
they're
too.
One of my favorites.
I was throwing some shade at The Police, and I was like, come on, man.
About, like, what was the critique?
I thought he just said...
Too poppy?
Just didn't like them.
Well, I mean, okay. People...
I should ask him.
You know, I run into this...
discerning.
I run into this with Genesis and with Rush.
Love Genesis.
And Rush, too.
And Rush.
Well, a lot of the people don't like the vocalists from these bands that I'm mentioning. The Police, Rush, and Genesis all have polarizing... I think that people don't like Phil Collins. People don't like Sting. People don't like Bono. People don't like a lot of these... The frontmans of these bands, I feel like, kind of ruin the band in a lot of ways because they're like, oh, Geddy Lee's voice, it's like chalk nails. Well, or chalk, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard or whatever.
I love Phil Collins' voice.
Phil Collins' voice, people
critique
Sting's
that. Sting's voice.
Sting's voice.
Come on. That's why they're popular. But I guess, you know, if they bug you, then yeah.
I think that for all of those bands that we mentioned, there's good instrumental stuff there that isn't all just about the pop singles. Like, The Police have great tracks that are just all about instrumentation and not so much the vocals.
I wonder if there is a thing, because I know there's an aesthetic choice, right? When it comes to bands like Creed,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, some of those...
Be vocally heavy. Yeah.
That kind of stuff, which gets them, or Nickelback, or it gets them that bad name, but it's really just sort of a difference. I think those bands got a bad rap because we were on the, you know, the upswing of some sort of, like, very... harsh feelings towards, like, country music and anything that smacked of overly, like, masculinized kind of southern sounding voices,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right?
And there's
and
always
the
like
same
a
thing with Phil Collins and Sting.
Yeah, there's a direct, like, almost opposite reaction to those things happening in music or whatever.
Like,
and
oh, this guy sounds sissy. This British guy, and he sounds all scratchy voiced or something. It is interesting how that works, right?
It is. And the trends and the kind of cycles of music, it is a trip. All right, I think that's it for the birthdays. One more.
Ed Kowalczyk, lead singer of Live. That's a good band.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to him in a long time. Listened to some Live the other day.
Yeah, I think they're actually getting back together. I think Ed Kowalczyk.
Oh, sorry.
Ed Kowalczyk. And he... he did a lot of solo stuff for a number of years, but I think he's actually getting back with Live now to do probably a 30th anniversary tour and some stuff like that. So
surprising, he's 52.
Yeah, I know. He looks pretty good. He's looking young.
Better than I do. All right.
All right, we got some trivia. Let's do it. We got some trivia. Band name that I left up there.
Oh. I'm going to get this one right.
Dang it. Okay, this week in rock and roll history trivia, guys. This band began their first U.S. tour in Seattle, opening for Herman's Hermits and Blues Magoos. Some fabulous band names from that era, I got to say. Those are like prime 1960s
band
names.
Blues Magoos and Herman's Hermits?
Right.
I like those names. They are. Nice and playful.
Right? Nice and playful. So who was it? Who had their debut U.S. tour? Was it The Who? Was it Pink Floyd? The Rolling Stones? Or was it D, Beetle Boot Crosby and the Cocaine Cool Cats? Actually had to change, fun fact, that he had three K's for this part.
It didn't really go well. Didn't go over well?
No, it wasn't really after World War II.
Well, he just thought, wait, how did that slip through?
Had to change it. So,
well, you know, Chris,
short-lived band.
I have no idea. I'm going to go with Pink Floyd.
Go Pink Floyd, huh?
I'm going to go with Pink Floyd.
Wow. All right. All right. Well, you'd be surprised to know that it's The Who.
Well, what?
No inkling whatsoever. You had no idea.
Happy Jack? What is that?
That was one of their... That was a character in a Robin Williams... No, what was that movie where they made fun of the mentally challenged guy? Ben Stiller played it.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember, wasn't it Happy Jack? And it was like he was a... They're like, oh no, you can't do, you can't go full R word. Oh God, what was it? It was the,
is that the one?
The movie with Robert Downey Jr. And they did that.
There's something about Mary. No,
no. It was the movie where it was like, it was the big budget movie, and Robert Downey Jr. played a blackface guy.
Oh my gosh, Tropic Thunder.
Yes, Tropic Thunder. Ben Stiller's...
How did that one get through? Like,
I know. That was
incredible. Yeah. I saw like 5 minutes of the other day and I was like,
yeah,
holy crap.
So you remember the Ben Stiller character in that? He plays himself and he's like talking about a movie he did where he played a mentally challenged kid. And I'm pretty sure
Happy Jack
was the name of the movie. And Ben Stiller's like this kid, and he's playing like a mentally challenged. It's totally like not PC. It's like really bad.
Well, so the first thing I thought of though when I saw that was we used to have an unhoused guy in town here. Wasn't his name Happy Jack? The guy who wore the all leather
transient?
Coat.
A transient man.
He wore the all leather coat and a leather cowboy.
I did not
hat
know him by
no
the name
shirt.
Of Happy Jack.
And he would pop out at you.
I'm
I remember
Happy Jack.
I was skateboarding at Bob Hart Square with Craig Peterson and
really
Amanda, and we were getting it. My sister came to pick us up. We were hopping in the Aerostar, and Happy Jack popped out. Ha! It was Happy Jack.
That's hilarious. Right, I did not know him by Happy Jack.
He was very happy.
Okay, we got some new rock and metal albums out.
Ooh.
July 14th.
This one's long.
This is a little long.
Oh man.
You think you can do it?
I'm going to do my darndest. Last week I could read them slowly.
All right, these are new albums that just came out July 14th. David, you ready?
Yes.
Take it away.
Calligram is a Calvary Morbid Datus, Irreversible Edge of Paradise, Hologram, Aline, We Shall Remain, and Brain, The Way of the Flesh and Decay, Evile, The Unknown, Freedom Call, The Metal Fest, Houston, Relaunch 3, Kikimora, For the Broken Dime, Mood Ring, The Light Fades Away EP, The Neil Morse Band, and Evening of Innocence and Danger, Live in Amber, Robledo, Broken Soul, Scream Maker, Land of Fire, Hail Gunner, Hires, Guns for Hire, Thomas Carlson, Transmission of Brave Horizon, Various Artists, Super Unknown, Redux, Vendetta, Black of Coal, Voice of Brace, Pod, Redis, Voyager, Beherless, Lost Granger, Storm of Frost.
You got it!
Do you like my news?
Yes.
That's
so you just talk like a robot.
I talk like the Micro Machines guy.
And then that's how you're able to achieve it. You
if it is not a metal, it's not the real thing.
It's more of a auctioneer.
Right? I don't know. Asshole.
That's what it was. It was auctioneer. I was trying to think of it. I'm like, what is that voice?
There's
that's
a
hilarious.
You know what? There's something to that.
I think so. You got to talk in a monotonous, quick
voice.
Half
of it
voice.
Just doesn't make any sense.
All right, this was kind of an unfortunate one to mention week. Wanted to see if you heard about this. Jonah Hill, his ex-girlfriend Sarah Brady, she's a surf instructor, took to Instagram over the weekend, detailed how Jonah Hill was allegedly emotionally abusive while they were in a relationship over the past couple years. Perez began dating in 2021, called it quits last year, shared multiple screenshots, I guess, of her Instagram stories of text messages with him, revealing that Hill asked her to take down surfing pictures that show her ass in a thong. In other exchange, he wrote, "If you need to go surfing with men to model and to post sexual pictures, then I am not the right partner for you." At first, Brady, who is a surf instructor, complied and took down photos at his request, but Hill still wasn't happy. In the text messages, he said it was a good start, but she didn't seem to get his point. Regarding these exchanges, she wrote, "I too struggle with mental health, but I do not use it to control people like he did to me." He said, quote, "It's been a year of healing and growth with the help of loved ones and doctors to get back to living my life without guilt, shame, and self-adjustment for things as small as surfing in a swimsuit rather than more conservative wetsuit," she added. "And I'm sure there's still much more healing from this abuse ahead of me." So what do you think of that? I'm sure he got with her while she was, you know.
Yeah, that's too bad. I think, you know, the first reaction for me is just like, oh, dang it. You know, because I like Jonah Hill.
I do too.
But I mean, come on. It's like, he's a jerk in his movies. Isn't that partly like his real persona?
Yeah. I think that maybe that's coming through a little bit.
Yeah.
That kind of neurotic, kind of controlling a little bit. Like, insecure.
Yeah, I recently watched just the beginning part of a movie. What is it called? It's a documentary film that he's been working on for a long time about his therapist.
Yeah. I did hear that, and that's really cool. I do like that.
Yeah. It was interesting. I saw the beginning of it. Couldn't continue.
I wonder if it's, you know, kind of tied into, like, this situation. Like, I'm going to do this thing on therapy and kind of me going through battling my demons, because all the while in 2021 and 2022 breaking up, this was going on. It was pretty heavy in his life, so I wonder if that's kind of, you know.
I mean, shoot, it's kind of one of those things where you go, yeah, that's not cool, you shouldn't be that way. At the same time, and I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but
we're
I'm
not.
Just like, well, it, you know, he has
insecurities
and issues.
And you know? Maybe that's the way he kind of wrote it, even though it was passive aggressive the way he did it. You know, to post this stuff, I'm not the right partner for you. That was kind of his subconscious probably saying, Jonah, I think you made a mistake, man. You probably were attracted to this lady because she was a freewheeling surf instructor, smoking hot, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then when he got into a relationship with her, his own insecurities and stuff
bugging him.
Couldn't let him deal with it. And that's super sad, too, because maybe they really did have an awesome connection. And he's probably, a decent dude. I don't think he's like some kind of a, you know, abusive person.
Yeah, I don't think he's like a total horrible person.
We're not talking anything physical abuse or anything like that, but this is like, you know, his own insecurities, and, you know, it's probably something he has a tough time. I know with his body image, it was a big deal. People used to take photos of him without a shirt on, and he would always wear a shirt, you know, when he would go swimming and stuff because of that, and he was very sensitive about his body image.
Yeah.
So I know he has those own things, and then he has a girlfriend that's, you know, very attractive and probably thinking he's getting competition from other guys who are clearly better looking than him, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Fuels the depression and the cycle, you know.
And it's one of those things, is like, you know, it's not cool to be that way. It's not something that you should do, you know, manipulating people and trying to change them in a way that they're not comfortable with. And, you know, that's not cool. At the same time, it is an interesting thing to see.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we got Jonah Hill, who's doing something that's now in the news.
Yep.
And we use these as these learning moments.
That's exactly what I was going to say. If anything, we can learn from these and take little pieces of this from our own lives and stuff. And,
and
you know, he's got to be the martyr and the guy on the cross, so to speak, that where, you know, he gets kind of crucified by the media and the public and everyone's judging him right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we could all learn from those things and those insecurities that maybe we all identify with ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think anything, just look at those things in a healthy way. And maybe they just needed to go their separate ways, and sometimes that's just the way life is.
You think this? Do you think this does him in any way?
I don't. Not really. But there was another girl that said another thing after this, that said something else in terms of, oh, he did this to me, kind of thing. He was really insecure about this and that, and would tell me to do stuff. And so I don't think it's going to ruin him. I think it's just going to take some time for him to kind of I think he should, you know, use this as a good thing. Like, hey, I realize this. I'm going to therapy. I'm trying to figure it out. You know, I'm a mess. You know,
and boy, we've come a long way though. We like that. This is newsworthy now. I mean,
I know
it's a long way from R. Kelly.
And
right?
I think yes, and I exactly. And I think this is the sea change in our culture, focusing on mental health, trying to focus on like the root of the problem, and things that were okay are not okay now. You know, in terms of. Why are we just accepting this? Why are we just saying okay?
Yeah,
why are we burying this?
You know,
right? Yeah, let's bring it out to light. Let's try and figure it out. And I think that's a good trend. You know, it's not like news per se, but at the same time, it's something that happens with people that we think are celebrities and they got it all together. It's good to realize that everybody's messed up, you know, and everybody has problems. No matter how much money you have and all this personal trainers and things like that, a guy like Jonah Hill can still feel inadequate. You know, with a girlfriend, and that's just a very human nature type of thing, you know? So I hope he gets through it and figures it out and hopefully doesn't do that in the future with other girlfriends. And
yeah, and she, you know, I don't want to necessarily talk about him the whole time, but I don't know much about her.
That's true, too.
Is she someone who is, like, famous? And
as far as I know, not famous, but she is a well-known instructor wherever this is taking place, wherever they live, or is if it's in Southern California or Hawaii. She works at a very professional place, I would imagine, and, you know, she's popular. She has a lot of followers on Instagram.
And there hasn't been any, like... He hasn't, like, retaliated or anything, right?
As far as I know.
Okay. Well, that's good. Hopefully it can, you know, they can, hopefully she's doing well.
Right. And, speaking of mental health, another thing that was brought up with another celebrity, somebody that I really look up to in terms of the shows they make and the things they put out, Rob McElhenney, one of my favorite actors from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Great series. It's a crazy series. Those guys have a dark sense of humor, and I love the show. But I thought it was really cool that he's kind of bringing light to his own diagnosis that he didn't need to share with everybody. But he's been diagnosed with a neurodevelopmental disorder and learning disabilities. At the age of 46, he's being diagnosed with this.
Wow.
So I guess he's never really been diagnosed officially in his younger years. He says, quote, "This is not something I would normally talk about publicly, but he thought there might be others out there who have had similar experiences. I want to remind you that you're not alone. You're not stupid. You're not bad. It might feel that way sometimes, but it's not true." He also shared that he will go through the full diagnosis prognosis on the next episode of the Always Sunny podcast, which will be released in a couple weeks. So if you guys want to check that out, it's definitely worth mentioning. So I feel like this is kind of, you know, another example of the artist kind of opening up. A lot of actors and people that, you know, for our generation are starting to, you know, let people know about their problems. And I think it's a good thing, ultimately.
Yeah, just for a broader understanding of what the human quilt,
yes,
you know, has to offer. Like, you know, we think of these as, you know, they're classified as neurodevelopmental disorders and disabilities. And, you know, there are differences in the way our brains work, and it's good for us to have better understandings of those differences.
Yep. So I think the more we get celebrities and actors that people enjoy their work and they're
paying
genuinely
attention to.
Yes, and they're good people. So, like, if they're bringing a voice behind these things, it's all for the better. So
not
very
this
cool.
Guy. I hate this guy.
You should check him. Have you ever seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I watched, like, the first...
I gotta show you some episodes.
The first, like... couple episodes of the first season.
No, I gotta show you some episodes.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. That was like 2003, if we're talking the first couple seasons.
I was
2004.
Like, wow, this is a different time.
Yep. I gotta show you some episodes, man.
I watched the one where they're all dating the high school students, and I was like, wow. There's
some really good ones. I got The Gang Solves the Gas Crisis. That probably one of the best episodes. I got to show you that, man. All right. I think that's... we got one more story here, David. Check this out.
The real... Hey, it's in Thailand!
It is in Thailand. And I got to ask you.
It says, Duo Jing, Qi Jing.
That's amazing. You know of this hemisphere in this culture.
Oh, yeah.
What is their... they apparently have this thing about cheese. They want to put cheese on everything. A trend in Thailand right now, they say, is to put cheese on everything. So Burger King has picked up on it and made this gimmick burger that I took.
Oh, my god!
And it's literally just 20 pieces of American cheese on a bun. That's it. No beef, no veggies, no condiments. And the cheese is not even melted. In the real photos you could see on the right, it's literally just cold cheese and bread.
Cheese, man.
Your gut probably would not thank you for that.
Man.
What do you think of that?
So what it says here, it says it's the real one, the real cheese.
The real cheese. Okay.
So the thing about, in Thailand, until very recently, cheese is not something anyone ate.
How come?
There just isn't a lot of cattle raising.
Ah, okay.
It's not a thing that people had access to. It's a Western food.
Right.
And cheese is one of those things that's quite strange, right? There are things that people eat in Thailand that we go, oh my goodness, you're eating fermented fish? That's strange. For them, they looked at cheese in the same way.
Right.
So it's kind of, the way I look at it is, it's kind of like when a white dude gets really showy about how they can eat spicy food.
Okay.
And they're like, check it out, man.
Yeah.
I eat spicy food just like someone from Mexico or Thailand or something like that, right? They're like, I'm just as cool. It's a little bit like, I feel like, I don't know.
That's a good point, to be honest with you. Like the extreme cheese. Like cheese to the extreme.
Most people in Thailand still, I would say, are like, I can't eat cheese.
Really?
They're like,
it's too foreign. It's like,
they're like, I have lactose intolerance. They're like, I can't eat
it. It doesn't agree with me.
No, I will destroy my insides.
This almost seems like a crazy thing to do then in that sense.
So to me it seems like that's why it's such a like, look how macho it is.
Right.
It's like, this is the real one. It's cheese. It's just cheese.
And it's nothing but cheese.
Yeah, that would be my commentary on it. I have to look into it. This is a surprise.
Yeah.
This
is kind of cool.
I'm very surprised at this. But this is a good example of something we call glocalization.
Yes.
Right? Where you take the local, it influences the global. Let's see if now we get the real cheese. The real cheese, but it's not a burger.
It's not a
burger.
We
get the real cheese sandwich.
I know.
They need to change the name
to the real cheese sandwich.
Right?
And do a grilled cheese. Like, put it in a fryer, put it in a panini press.
I mean, it looks melted.
On the left,
but then
it does.
On the right, it's just the...
No.
They're like, we're not going to heat this up. We're going to put these weird star-shaped cheese things on here.
Well, if you're in Thailand, pick one up, guys. Let us know how it is.
Good gosh.
That's it for us this week, guys. Everything on rocknewsweekly.com. All socials at rocknewsweekly. Watch us live every Sunday, 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly. We will see you guys next week. Have a good rest of your afternoon, morning, or night.
See you
later, guys. Peace.